Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Arizona Good Business Radio, connecting leaders together to have conversations about building strong local communities through doing good business. I'm your host, Thomas Barr, Executive Director of Local First Arizona, a statewide organization advocating for and celebrating locally owned businesses. We are the largest local business coalition in North America and raise awareness of the benefits of building a strong local economy. Our hopes today are to inspire more companies to do good business by highlighting local companies that are building a better Arizona. Today, I'm joined by Brandon Wiley, the CEO, and Mike Carrillo, the Chief Evangelist of FetchRev, soon to be Hound. We're really excited to have you guys here today. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks for having us. Yeah.
Absolutely. So Hound is an automated marketing platform, helps local businesses drive foot traffic back into their businesses. You're going to explain it better than me. Why don't you let everybody know what Hound is?
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, I'd like to start with saying what our mission is all about.
Yeah.
So we have love for small business owners. We want to support the dream of business ownership. And one of the best ways that we know how to do that is to make sure that they have consistent, predictable foot traffic coming in the door. And it's also profitable as well. There's lots of ways to get people in the door, but to also lose money. And so, or have it be really expensive foot traffic. We want to make sure it's affordable and also effortless for the small business owner.
Mm-hmm.
So we help them collect customer contact information. And then we take that contact information from consumers and past customers and then send out targeted promotions to those consumers across multiple channels, over email, over social media, the actual business's website, and then also now over a new Hound app that'll be coming out pretty soon in October.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just doing whatever we can to get people to come in the door.
Very exciting. Very exciting. So let's take a step back from that because that's like big picture stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's learn more about the two of you. Tell us a little bit about your background, where you come from. Why is this something that you care so much about?
Yeah. So really, I had the benefit of growing up here in Arizona. So Arizona native, Brandon is too.
So there's three of us.
There are three Arizona natives in one room.
Yeah. Wow.
I think it's about 50% of them if you added them up all together.
Well, we're usually a third of the room.
Yeah. But yeah, I had the benefit of growing up here in Arizona. Dad, who's a small business owner, which is really how I got into it.
Cool.
Prior to coming to FetchRev, I had the same thing, worked, owned a variety of different small businesses around the valley. Call centers, auto glass repair, tint detail, done a lot of different things over the years, but always been in that small business space. And so just growing up and living in both as a child and then grow as an adult, seeing everybody has the same problem, right? Which is, how do I get more customers in the door?
Mm-hmm.
And growing up in small business, you know, my dad would always be the first to say, you know, if more customers can fix your problem, then you have a good problem, right? Mm-hmm. That's a good problem in a business to have, but it's the one that we really would like to try to fix.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, same for me. So Arizona native, as Mike mentioned, and you know, my family is small business owners. In fact, actually, our families come from similar background in insurance and others. And I've had multiple small businesses myself as well, mm-hmm. and run into the same struggle that every small business owner has. And that's the fact that I don't have the time or sometimes the expertise to do some of the things that I need to get done in my business. That could be filing my taxes. That could be actually doing marketing. It could be doing sales. There's different aspects of my business that I don't necessarily have the expertise to do. And felt like there was a major problem with these small business owners. It's a classic e-myth problem, mm-hmm. where they're trying to be in their business and do all the different work that's needed. But at the same time, they just don't have that time or expertise. They really should be working on their business instead of in it.
Yeah.
So we're just trying to solve one very key aspect of that. We're not trying to, you know, solve all of their problems, but if we can solve the problem of who's walking in their door, then we're at least making a big impact for them.
Yeah. So I would say you are, you know, this growing tech company in Arizona. Where did technology come into play? Where obviously you've got this passion behind building something that helps businesses, but where did the technology piece come into that?
So we began with building just another DIY platform or tool. This is something that I think every software business that's tried to solve this problem for small businesses has done.
Mm-hmm.
They've gone and just built a tool, and maybe they tried to make it a better mousetrap. They tried to make it a better tool. But at the end of the day, it still requires that small business owner to to learn the tool, to actually go in and do the work, and then have the expertise to build the tool.
Right.
Well, so we did the same thing. We fell into the same trap, and we called it FetchRev, and that's what we've been working and building as for the last 3 years. But what we very quickly realized is that they weren't getting the same level of impact from the platform, from the tool that we built for them. I mean, it was a pretty straightforward, basic software marketing automation tool. So we took our customer success team and we said, hey, what if we actually began to build campaigns for them? And as soon as we started doing that with human beings, we realized that taking the expertise and the data that we have inside of our walls, and if we're able to apply that to our own tool, how much better can these be? We found that we were actually able to generate up to 5x ROI for these customers, where they were only seeing maybe 2, maybe 3, or no ROI at all when they were trying to do it themselves. So we said, all right, now what can we do to take that human element and really begin to apply some major automation so that we can do it at scale? Because one of the core things that a small business owner doesn't have is that scale. Big enterprise companies do, mid-market companies do. They can go and hire huge marketing teams, use these big, robust software platforms, but they don't have the ability to go, but the local business owner doesn't have the ability to go and do that. We said the only way we can deliver that at scale for thousands and thousands of small businesses in here in Arizona, but then across the US and Canada and other countries, the only way we can go and do this at scale and deliver the same value, the same level of success is through automation. So we really had to then ramp up what we're doing on our technology side, build our engineering team much more robustly, and then also begin to explore how we can deliver better personalization to the consumer. If we're going to drive the most conversions for a consumer, more people in the door for business, then we have to deliver promotions, have to deliver value to the consumer that's relevant to them. In order to deliver that relevance, we have to really do things that are personalized. And again, only way to do personalization is through machine learning and automation and then deliver that at scale. So that's taking a look at the problem. How can we solve the problem in a better way? We're going to have to do it with technology.
Yeah, it's super interesting. And I think it shows that you both come from a background of business ownership, because what you're talking about has this just true natural juxtaposition, right? Automation versus personalization. And I think the common thing that we read about or hear about, and Brandon, you and I have talked about this before, is that, you know, you have all of these automated things happening in the world, and people, there's certain people that are very like resistant to them because they think that it's taken away from the personalization that you have with a business that when you go into it. But at the same time, the world is rapidly moving through technology and business and all these things. And you've kind of taken both of those ideas and married them together quite nicely. What is it like really? Like when you talk to a business and say, hey, we want to personalize your business more, but we're going to do it through automation. Do you get some confused looks sometimes?
Yeah, I think that it's misunderstood sometimes, right? Because you want that personal connection, that relationship. But I think what it comes down to is scale, is what are you able to do on your own? If you're going to do that on your, like, you're already asked to wear so many different hats to do a particular job. In order to do every aspect of running a business well, you have to be a superhero, which is why you end up hiring other people and bringing other people in. But then in order to compete, right? So now for a small business owner to be able to compete against the backing of some of these larger organizations, right? So I just ordered a laptop and it had to come from China and it took a week and I was losing my mind because I want everything here tomorrow, right? Because now I have an expectation as a consumer that that's what should happen. So that expectation goes along to things like personalization, and the messaging that you're getting should be coming in a personalized way. But how does a small business owner do that? Right. So what you end up with is kind of a technology gap where there's these larger companies that have the resources to be able to provide that level of personalization, where the small business owner is kind of left in a little bit of a lurch because there's not, how do you compete on that scale? How do you use things like the data that you have in order to grow your business when you don't have that level of a backing? And I think that's what we'd really like to bring, is how do we bring a tool to them, to business owners that they can use, have that level of personalization, not have to be a marketing expert. You don't have to know all the ins and outs of how to run each of these campaigns perfectly, but still have the success that you're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we talk to, obviously, business owners all the time, and they're tasked with sending content out to their customers. a lot of times they've been told, I mean, for the last 10, 15 years, they've been told they need to send newsletters out to their customers. Mm. We all know that when was the last time you actually got a newsletter from a business as a consumer that you actually opened and read? You don't, right? I mean, but that's what we've been told as small businesses we need to do.
Right.
Well, that takes that business owner long enough. It takes hours to craft that newsletter. And that's one newsletter being sent out to 1,000 different customers, you know, past customers maybe they have, or even if they have 100, maybe they're sending that newsletter and they're crafting it. They took hours to do that. They sent that out. And then maybe 10% of those people actually open that newsletter and read,
which is
and
good.
Then, which is really good. And then maybe like 1% or 10% of that 10% actually do any sort of take any sort of action after that.
And it's hard to track whether or not they did.
And it's hard to track whether or not they did. Yeah. Well, if that business owner wants to send something that's personalized, that's going to deliver relevance and value to that consumer, but each individual consumer, they have to think about, they have to get in the heads of each consumer and they have to send something to them, 100 different times if they only have 100. So if you want to deliver that personalization, the only way you can do that successfully and effectively for a small business owner or really any business is through automation. And it's through taking what we've learned about that specific consumer, basically what the consumer has told us, because we're very careful around what we're gathering, the type of information we're gathering, making sure that it's only explicitly what the consumer has told us about themselves and given us permission to use. But taking that information and then sending something to that person that's going to be relevant and it's going to have value and making sure that that's done on a regular, repeatable basis. It has to be done through automation.
Yeah. So how does Pound handle a world where we are increasingly weary of our data? How do you use that as a tool and help businesses utilize data, which I think is needed? I mean, you've got to know who your customers are. You've got to know your demographics. You've got to know who you're going after all the time. We hear these horror stories of X company has 100,000 credit cards stolen or whatever it is, right? Yeah. And not that that's the type of data you're dealing with, but how do you build trust, not only between business owners, but help business owners build that trust with their consumers through what you're doing?
Well, hopefully we, one, just by having that trust with the merchant that we've been able to build up, some of that trust from the merchant is conveyed to us for those consumers. But more importantly, we're able to deliver a type of a level of privacy protection and a level of general security that a typical small business owner doesn't have the ability to deliver. And even just keeping up with changing privacy laws, the U.S. over the next 5 to 10 years is going to see massive shifts. And we're just talking about the United States, right? Massive shifts in privacy laws from state to state until we eventually have some sort of federal law that protects the privacy of consumers that kind of overarches that. But you just take the California Consumer Privacy Act, the CCPA that comes out in January of next year. Any small business in California is going to have to follow the same regulations that any large business in California is going to have to do. And they don't have the ability to track all of those different laws, how those things change, the different legislative hurdles. And so we've made sure that we've struck the right partnerships, built the right things, protections inside of our technology. So we work with another local company here called Truio. They're actually helping us deliver the type of privacy protection that's required for CCPA, but then also is required for GDPR, required for CASEL in Canada, and then will help us to really monitor our overall privacy regulations compliance over the course of the next few years.
Yeah, and I think we've tried to take an active role in as Brandon and I get the opportunity to speak at different conferences and things like that around the country, we try to take that opportunity to go and educate on how to protect your data as well. Because there are simple things within your business you can do to make sure that you're not leaving yourself open for in that gap of how are you protecting, even if it's just as simple as an email address, like let alone an email address and a name, email address, name, and a birth date. Like, how do you go about protecting that in a way that's, because it really has to be mutually beneficial, right? As consumers, we want personalization.
Yeah.
Right? We want to have an experience that's tailored for us, but at the same time, we want to feel like our data is protected.
Yeah.
So how do you walk that line? Well, it's the key is erring on the side of protection for the consumer and then only collecting the data that's relevant to what you're trying to do, right? Not trying to just amass as much as you can,
but
how do you collect relevant data to provide the best you can, the best experience that you can, but at the same time, knowing that you're going to work and do everything in your power to protect that as much as you possibly can.
Sure.
Yeah, and making sure that the data that we've actually collected on those consumers is clear and transparent as well.
Yeah.
That they know at any time that they can ask, say, hey, what data do you have on me?
Mm-hmm.
And here it is. Cool. Here's the data. And making sure that before we send anything to them, it's been expressly, they've expressly asked
you've
for.
You've opted in.
Yeah, they've opted in, effectively, yeah.
Cambridge Analytica.
Exactly. And in most cases, it's you have to make sure there's an exchange of value for that mm-hmm. data. Consumers will willingly give their data up if they know they're going to get a value exchange, and also if they know they can ask for you to remove that data
yeah.
or get it later down the line.
Right. Yeah. I think consumers are smart. Like we're all smart people. We know when we click on something and say, yes, you can use my profile or log in with the profile, what you're doing at this time. Like there's a band that had just put out like something, they're releasing an album in another month, and they posted something on social media that said something to the sorts of, win one of four like records that we're giving away before the album release, like click here. And I clicked on it and like took me this outside link, and it was like, we'll have access to like creating new playlists on your Spotify account and like changing what songs you like. And I was like, no, not worth like a record.
Your firstborn child.
Right. Please show up on Tuesday for your blood sample.
Yeah. Like, but yeah. Great music though.
Yeah, that's right. have you guys watched Hacked yet?
I haven't.
Oh.
I haven't watched Hacked. Are you talking about the Great American Hack?
No, so Hacked, well, maybe. Hacked is the Netflix documentary about Cambridge Analytica.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
I was watching it on a Saturday. My wife wasn't with me, and I texted her, and I was like, I'm just deleting all of my social media.
Right? Oh, it's terrifying.
Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah. Well, and you should, as a consumer, be able to go to whatever that company is and say, no, I want you to remove that data.
Right.
And be able to do it with confidence of knowing that they're going to follow through.
Yeah.
Right? It used to be, there was a time when people would call and say, I would like you to remove me from this call list.
Yeah.
Right? And there was a point where you knew that they would actually do it. And then now I still say it, even though I know no one's deleting me from anything. But you should be able to have that confidence. Whatever provider is holding that data, and go to them and say, hey, you know, I want out. And yeah. You should be able to do that easily.
And that should carry down to the third party partners.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that's where that was really the big gap with Facebook and Cambridge Analytica, was that they had this third party partner who said that they had deleted all the data but didn't. And so Facebook was trying to do what they probably should have done maybe a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
But they were trying to follow the right steps, but their third party partners didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And continued to leverage that data for reasons that ultimately they shouldn't have been.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just I tie together kind of the nature of this show, like what should a good business actually be doing? Like, and especially talking about data, I think what you're doing is the transparency. As consumers, we want more transparency, right? As businesses, we want more transparency. It's when that stuff is complicated and we don't quite understand what's going on, where there's that distrust built. So I think that's what you all are doing really well. So from like an outside perspective, somebody that doesn't have the tech lens and the understanding behind kind of the mechanics of what you guys are doing, what's the difference between Fetra / soon to be Hound and other marketing automation type platforms out there that claim to drive more business for you, be it Groupon or something like that, which don't get me started. But
no, let's get started.
So I was a young man in my career, and I went to my first conference ever, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to go out. I'm going to meet people. I'm going to put myself out there. I'm going to build my network. First person I walked up to, and this was for like local businesses, like connecting, walked up and said, hey, I'm Thomas, local first, like really excited to be here. Like, what's your name? And I forget the person's name, but they said, hi, I am blank and I'm with Groupon. And I was just like, great. This was not the first connection I wanted to make today.
Well, yeah, if you want to touch on
– yeah, I mean,
we have those conversations all the time.
Yeah, ultimately, I think whether we're talking about the data collection or just driving new business, the relationship between a company like ours and a merchant, as we would call it, right?
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a symbiotic relationship. It can't overly weigh one over the other. Whether it's consumer data to a business, you have to collect, you have to protect that and honor that, or between a company like Groupon and say a small business. So if you're, in order to get business in your door, if you're already having to cut your service costs in half. You then have to give up half of that revenue once you do it. And it, you end up feeling like, oh, this is a necessary evil. If you're not feeling good about the vendors that you're using, then there's probably something broken in the process. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's ultimately what we're after is how do we create an environment where consumers can have good opportunities to purchase from good businesses at a fair price, but also that isn't undermining the business. It shouldn't be one trying to get something over on the other. Mm-hmm. You also shouldn't have to walk into a restaurant with a promotion and this, you're kind of nervous to pull it out. Right. You don't really want to like show your waiter yet. Yeah, you're kind of like, ah, I don't know if I have a Groupon. And you try to bring it up at the end, right? Well, why do you feel weird about using a promotion that the business put out there to get you to come in the door?
Right.
Well, that tells me there's something broken in the system, right? And that's ultimately, I think, what we're trying to get after.
Yeah, and a lot of, especially with Groupon or any of those deal sites or portals, a lot of it comes down to sustainability is a word that we use a lot internally. Mm-hmm. Those types of things aren't sustainable. Maybe there's a loss leader product that you can offer on Groupon to get those new customers in the door in the first time. And, and there's arguably a good a good place for something like that, a good time for something like that. The problem is it's not sustainable over the long term. If you're, you know, let's say, you know, you're a consumer and you're ready to, you're in the parking lot for a business that you've already made the decision to go to. But before you walk into that business, you like pull out your phone and say, yeah, I'm going to see if there's a Groupon here. And you go and buy that Groupon before you walk into that business. That's not sustainable for the business. Mm-hmm. Arguably, they'd already paid that customer acquisition cost to Groupon the first time you came in the door. But now you're paying it again and again for the same customer to come back in over and over. And the consumer is ultimately doing what's best for them, and that's fine. But it's also not what's sustainable for that business, what's sustainable for the community, and not sustainable, certainly not sustainable for a local business.
Right.
And so this is the big issue when you have those types of platforms.
Yeah.
You know, there's certainly other tools out there as well. There's the loyalty and rewards platforms, and you know, those are fine. There's a place for those as well. But they're certainly not building any loyalty for a specific business. Mm-hmm. What builds loyalty is a good customer experience, a good product, the local business owner just doing what they started this business to do in the first place and just what they're passionate about. Mm. That's really what builds the loyalty.
Absolutely.
The rewards platform is just giving a reward to somebody who's going to come into that business over and over again anyway. And that's fine. There's a place for them. But that's certainly not what's going to drive that traffic in the door.
Right.
And so a business has to be really careful if they've got a specific marketing budget or spend that they have to do. They have to think about where they're spending their money. And Groupon is a cost. There is cost there.
Right.
A marketing loyalty rewards programs, I mean, like Punch or Five Stars or these guys, there's a cost there to those. And is the right value exchange for that cost there for the business? That's something they have to decide and discover for themselves.
Yeah, right. It's like, you put something on there and you've automatically devalued the product or the service. Like,
right.
Automatically. And whoever is getting access to that automatically views the value of that product or service at that level. And so they'll never go up.
And you start to devalue your brand at that point, right? And ultimately, like none of us have gone and bought 9 bad sub sandwiches to get a 10th one for free, right? Like we just haven't done it. Yeah. And now if it's a good sandwich, I'll pay even more than I probably should for it, right? Because that's what you do when you love a product and you love a service.
Yeah.
I have my favorite sandwich place in Gilbert. Not Your Typical Deli. They make amazing sandwiches.
What's
they have
the name?
Amazing. Not Your Typical Deli.
It's literally.
That's what it's called. That's the name. NYT.
Well, I still want to know the name.
Yeah. Well, go check it out. They are fantastic. But it's what they provide that makes them amazing.
Yeah.
They've never offered me a loyalty program, right? But how do you? How do you get them in the door so you can deliver that experience? Because as business owners, we all want to deliver that A-plus experience, right?
Yeah.
We want to knock it out of the park for our customers. How do you get them in the door and get them in the door in the right way, in a way that's sustainable in the long term?
Well, and this is why we've been very careful around the words that we choose inside of our product as well. There's a reason why we haven't called the things that we send to our consumers, to the business's past customers, deals or offers or these things. We call them promotions because a promotion doesn't necessarily have to be some big giant discount. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be some buy one, get one free, you know, BOGO. It can literally be something that's just promoting a new sandwich that you've got.
Right.
And the sandwich could be full price.
Right.
But that promotion go out. And what you're doing is leveraging a platform that gets that promotion out to not just your past customers in a more personalized way, but also accesses a broader set of consumers in your community in general.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're really looking to do with Hound as well. So leverage the consumer community that's been built up over time, not only just here in Arizona and Maricopa County, but also across the U.S.
Yeah.
And get those promotions out to those consumers.
So what would you say to like local restaurants who I talk to a lot of them all the time, and they feel that they need to, just to stay in the market, participate in things like Grubhub and Postmates and these things that, from what I hear, tend to take 30% from what the consumer is paying just for the service. And they're not making any money off of that, right? It's, I mean, if anything, they may be selling the product at a loss because of what it takes to, but at the same time, it's like, well, if I don't participate, then all these people that are purchasing food on these platforms aren't going to reach out to me or whatever it is, right? Or we don't offer delivery services. So what would you say to them? What kind of approach would you recommend to them?
Yeah, I mean, so those delivery platforms are difficult because they do provide a network. Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting, though, about the delivery platforms today, you just listed like a few, and there's probably like two or three others.
Yeah, there's like five in the market.
There's five in the market currently that are competing. And, you know, eventually they'll beat each other up enough that there'll be two in the market.
Right.
It's an Uber and Lyft scenario. Yeah. There'll be two in the market that'll remain, you know, here within the next 2 to 3 years. But what I found really successful for at least the few small businesses that have decided that this is a key integral part of their business, that they recognize that there is a network that they're accessing they didn't get access to before, is to form a partnership that's almost exclusive, nearly exclusive, with one or two of these specific platforms, and not just say, hey, we're going to take everybody out there, because if a consumer again really likes that sandwich, and they just happen to not be able to get out of the office that day or not get out of their home for some mm-hmm. reason, but they still want that sandwich, mm-hmm. They're going to go and work with whoever it is that you've chosen to partner with. Once you've chosen that partner, you're now in a better position to negotiate better pricing and deliveries, because you're saying, hey, look, I'm not going to go with all of your competitors. So I'm going to go with the one who I'm going to go with you, because I think that we can form a great partnership. So we're going to get a better price because of it. That's where we've seen it be really successful.
And not being afraid to ask.
Yeah.
Right. Just ask. One of my favorite policies ever. Just you see what you can do working out with that. But I think ultimately I would love to see a world in which there are no businesses that people are forced to use because they're a necessary evil.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I think ultimately that's what gets us out of bed in the morning is I hate that situation where you feel like, oh, well, I have to use it. I know it doesn't feel good for my business. It doesn't feel right. Like I don't want, but I feel like it's a necessary evil. Ultimately, that's, I think, Helen's goal is how do we get customers in the door in a way where you don't feel gross by participating in the system,
mm-hmm.
Where it's bringing a benefit to the consumer versus just in that scenario, that's a benefit to the consumer because I don't have to leave. And I tell you what, I love Uber Eats, right? Like I'm one of those guys who likes that convenience.
Mm-hmm.
But how do you do that in a way that's sustainable for both parties, to where the business benefits, the consumer benefits? That's sustainability. That's long-term sustainability.
Yeah, right? And so I think you've hit on a good point here. Really what the core is, and I think the one of the major differences between Hound and what we do and just our general ethos and culture internally is and how we separate ourselves from any of these other platforms or networks that are out there, whether it's food delivery network, whether it's a deal network, or it's a review network like a Yelp or something, right? We're merchant first.
Mm.
So we are business owner first. We have a little bit at the tail end of our mission statement that speaks to consumers and how we want to deliver relevant and valuable experiences to them.
Mm-hmm.
But really, the very beginning, the mission behind Hound is to support the dream of business ownership. Mm-hmm. And if we put the consumer first, or we don't make sure that we're doing what's best for the merchant at the end of the day, then we know that we're, one, failing our own internal culture mm-hmm. and ethos, but also we're failing the local business owner who's struggling to build their business in their community and do the right thing for their family and for their employees.
Yeah.
And having that sustainability, that's ultimately what's good for the consumer. Because if businesses are thriving and they're making money and they're able to grow and they're hiring more employees, right? It's that whole system is none of us want to take advantage of the small business owner because we all want to support that community. But at the same time, when you have a Groupon and it's like, hey, well, I could pay half the price, it's hard not to, right? So so you end up kind of in this spot where most consumers aren't in that position where they want to feel like, hey, we're getting one over on the business.
Right.
But if it's there, it's there.
Yeah.
Right. So it's that sustainability. It's how do we do it in a way that's respectful for both?
Yeah.
Because that's going to benefit. That's what's going to grow communities. That's what's going to build jobs. That's what's going to grow Phoenix.
That's what strong local economies are.
That's exactly right.
I always tell the story of there was a woman that her founder knew that she knew her through Eddie Basha. So when Eddie Basha was still with us, he shared this story about a woman that you know, was in a bind, and she wanted to have a business donate to her son's t-ball team, and, you know, approach the Bashes, and they said, absolutely, you know, snacks whole season long. And Eddie Bash said, you know what, we can do the food, but we're not going to be able to do the drinks. So would you like us to, like, send you, like, information about how you can get the drinks through Bash's? She's like, oh, no, I'll just get that stuff through Costco. And every time I tell that story, people's just hearts just sink to their gut.
Just like gasp. Like,
yeah.
So we have a little buzzer in the show. Yeah. It's
like a bell. Bing. Yeah. But I still think, like, as much as I would love to hope to think that people understand the perspective of the small business owner or the local business in general, small or large, I think that there's still a lot of educating and advocacy that we have to do as people that understand that, to get people to know where that business is coming from. You know, where we, in order to build a strong community, a strong Phoenix, a strong Arizona economy, we have to support those businesses that are there. And so that's why I love what you guys do, is because you're helping build that trust and build that connection. I love your note on Just Ask. When people find out about Local First, they tend to, one of the first things they ask me is, well, how do you know what a local business is? And what I always tell them is, next place you buy something from, next store you go into, ask the person that you talk to who owns this place. Just ask them.
Yeah.
And just that mindset gets you thinking. Like, mm-hmm. if you walk into a Target and you ask somebody who owns this place, I bet nobody has any idea who owns Target.
That yeah. works out, right? Yeah, exactly.
Maybe they I assume Mr. Target.
Right.
I'm going to go with that, yeah.
But, I mean, it gets you start thinking, oh, who are the business owners that I know in my life? Like, who do I patron where I actually know that the owner is the person running this company? And it really, like, helps your worldview. Like, those businesses you fly by at 40 miles an hour on the highway or whatever, starts to get to see, like, oh, these are the businesses that are actually here in my community. It's a really, really powerful way to think about it. So. Yeah.
Well, and it speaks to that technology gap and that funding gap, where you have these companies that are able to get their brand in front of you all the time, right? You're able to see them in their apps. You're able to see them in commercials. They can afford the billboards down the street. But then that little hole-in-the-wall sandwich place that, like, really needs your business and, frankly, is 1,000 times better, you just don't see them. So mm-hmm. It takes a mindset shift to be able to say, how do we begin to start to see these in a little bit different light? And then hopefully, you know, we can help bring some of that too.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that's ultimately what we're trying to do with our Hound app and building that Hound consumer community that's focused around building and helping grow small businesses, just mm-hmm. bringing awareness and bringing more of these small businesses in front of consumers and saying, hey, look, there's some really good things happening in your local community.
Mm-hmm.
So go check these places out. Mm-hmm. Every time that a consumer goes in and visits, using one of the promotions through the app, every time the consumer goes in and visits, and they redeem their promotion in there, a little thing pops up and just says, hey, you've one more visit to a local business. You're a local business rock star. And then they keep unlocking badges. And it's maybe a little gimmicky, but really what it's trying to do is promote the idea that there's some they're supporting local businesses in their community and how important that is, and that you should be rewarded for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Love it.
Changing a mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I know the answer to this, but I want to get your guys' take. For the people out there that say, you know what, the world's just shifting, like, people only shop online now. Why would I go into a brick and mortar store? What would your response be?
I mean, there's a million reasons. I mean, for my first just immediate thought, I have four little kids at home. And when you came and bought from my small business, that's what you're supporting, mm-hmm. right? You're supporting, like, getting cleats for the next soccer game. You're supporting uniforms for school. Like, that's what you're doing when you're supporting a small business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me, that's ultimately what my mindset comes back to, is where is it you're spending your money? You know, where you're spending your money, that's where your heart is. Get your heart in local business. Get your heart in the local community, because ultimately that's what's going to grow our community. That's what's going to create more jobs. And ultimately it's going to provide the jobs that my kids are going to take, right?
Yeah.
And 10 years down the road.
Right.
So I think that's, for me, why I immediately flinched to.
Right.
Yeah. And I think it depends on what you're buying and what you're looking to experience as well. So one of the things that we focus on, not exclusively, but we focus on heavily, is experiential-based businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So they're still brick and mortar, and they're still owned and operated by somebody local in the community.
Yeah.
But they are something where I'm going to go and get a massage, or I'm going to go and take my kids for 2 hours at the trampoline park around the corner, or the little inflatable park, or I'm going to go take them for ice cream at some, like a local ice cream shop, or those things that are experiential in nature, and they're consumption, but they're consuming of experiences. I think is one of the things we've been exploring and experimenting with is ways to drive that type of same type of traffic to a brick and mortar location that sells goods. And as long as those goods are consumable of some sort and can mm-hmm. be consumed on a regular repeat basis, then that's something that we believe that we're going to be able to help with ultimately.
Yeah, that's cool. And the biggest thing that I always remind myself about when people bring that up is that the fact that I know for a fact in Arizona, over 80% of people still buy the majority of their products in person, like they're getting out of their home and going to a store. So I think it's a complete myth that people are just buying things online now.
Well, I think that there's as you see shifts in any sort of environment, you start to kind of have certain beliefs that you realize are just kind of self-imposed. For instance, I remember we send out a lot of stuff via email. And I remember a question we get often on the road is, isn't email dead? Like, does anybody, I was like, well, you checked your email 7 times since we've been standing here having this conversation. Your email isn't dead, your content's dead, right? So you're drawing the wrong conclusion just because you live in this environment where you think, oh, everybody buys everything online. Like, no, we still go into orders. That's a perception that's probably being marketed to us that really I think we have to continue to fight upstream about.
Yeah.
And I think we'll end up hopefully finding a balance between those things that are staples. So if I need to go and just buy a bunch of toilet paper, maybe I can go to a Bash's and make that purchase to buy the toilet paper. They're the kind of consumables or the commodities.
Yeah.
And then there's the things that actually I want to put my hands on before I actually, whether it's clothes that I'm wearing, whether it's actually produce or food or other things that I'm buying, I want to be able to put my hands on that and experience that. And I think that's where we'll really begin to find that blend between, commodities that can be either delivered. And I think the other side of it is not taking all the ownership off of the small business locally as well, and using tools like ours to help bring kind of a digital mindset to a brick and mortar local business, locally owned business as well. A Bash's, and not to pick on Bash's, but we mentioned it, so we'll say it, a Bash's should think about how they can make sure that their business is sustainable in the long term as people move more digitally and as they buy more with their phone, even if that means that I can interact and I can make those purchases in my phone and then a local Bash's courier brings it to my my office or my home or wherever it is that I'm bringing those goods. Like, I think those are things that we just in general should be helping other businesses think through as they move more and try to find that balance, that blend.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think a very common theme in every industry that we work in, and I just think it's kind of human nature in general, is you start to see this disruption in your industry. You're starting to see a shift, a change happening that may alarm you, it may excite you. But I think sometimes our tendency is to then dig our feet in. We say, no, we're not going to do it that way. No, we're not going to embrace it. We're going to stand alone. We're going to be the original. When really there's a home in there in between where you're saying, okay, how do I provide the experience that now my consumers are expecting to a degree, right? And we can sit and we can dig your heels in and say, no, I'm not going to participate.
Right.
Or we can say, hey, how do I help up that experience and make what I'm bringing to the table a little bit stronger and maybe merge some of that? And what we tend to see is those who are fighting against it in its entirety, those often end up falling by the wayside. So what are the things you can adopt that are going to be able to help provide that experience, knowing that your consumer still wants to come in and do business with you as a human, right? And how do you humanize yourself as not just a small business owner? Everybody has the perception of small business owners that they're rolling in it, right? Your employees all think you're rich. All your customers think that you're rich. And the reality is it's not usually that, right? Mm-hmm. That's not usually the case for most small business owners. Mm-hmm. So continue to humanize yourself and also not be afraid of the changes, but embrace the changes and be that thought leader, be that front runner in your industry to say, okay, how do we adopt some of this and make this applicable on my scale to bring that to the end consumer?
And not be afraid to fail or make, to try things. And I mean, this is what we do all the time. Like, we fail all the time inside of our organization.
Real good.
Like, real good, like big failures and small failures. And we learn from those and we move forward and we iterate and we make changes and we try to continually try new things and new experiments. There's a very likely, there's a strong likelihood that a year from now, we'll look back and say, well, that thing we tried for 6 months, that sure didn't work out.
Yeah.
So maybe we should try something else. So it shouldn't be any different for a small business, especially when it comes to moving from the pure brick and mortar where everybody just drives their, hops in their car or walks down the street or rides their bike to the local business, buys it, and then comes back home every day. It just isn't the reality anymore. And so how can we, how can small businesses move into that new world?
Sure.
We're one small piece of that. And hopefully just through having these types of discussions and talks, we can ultimately help others think about ways that they can move forward in a different way.
I love the mindset of failing forward. Is that a big part of the culture at Hound?
Absolutely. So what we like to drive towards is what we call validated learnings, which are things that, we're willing to try something and experiment something as long as, and it may fail or it may succeed, but as long as we came away with something that we learned. So we either invalidated a specific hypothesis or idea up front, or we validated that. And we validated it through data typically. Mm-hmm. So that's how we like to, so whether you call it failing forward or not, like we are ultimately moving forward. Mm-hmm. One of my personal mottos is semper meliorum, which is always better. I believe that that is absolutely what we try to do inside of Hound. Everything that we do moves us forward one incremental step at a time. Sometimes it's two steps back and then three steps forward, then one step back and three steps forward. But we always want to be moving forward ultimately and learning from each experience.
Right. So what's been your biggest mistake as a business owner, Brandon?
Oh, geez. As we know, the biggest part of any business is the people that you have in your, the people that you have in your team, whether it's in your leadership team or it's just every other person in your team. So honestly, some of my biggest mistakes is not letting somebody go as quickly as I should have. Hmm. So it hands down can be detrimental to your business if you're not hiring slow and firing fast. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that sounds callous, but like it really, if you're trying to do what's best for your end customer, you've got to make sure you've got the right people in the seat that care about your customers, that are passionate, that have the right drive, that fits your value system that you put in place. We always regret. I've always regretted when I've kept somebody around longer than they ultimately should have been.
What are the values that the company holds or is proud of having, either of you?
Well, I don't know if we can say them.
Okay.
I don't know. So
what's the rating on those? Rating on the walls anywhere?
At the end of the day, we have seven, we call our esprit de corps.
Okay.
The first one is GSD.
Okay.
But we actually say it out loud.
Okay. Get stuff done.
Get stuff done.
Yeah.
That's the PG version of that. And it's do the right thing at all costs.
Okay.
It is earning the trust of others. As being devoted to everyone's success, having a relentless pursuit of excellence. And then the one that is really drives and is kind of the circles around, and besides being innovative and efficient and innovative, the one that really kind of holds everything together at the end is the achievement is effing awesome.
You gotta love to win.
Because we gotta love to win. And if we are trying to win and always trying to achieve, there's failure along the way to win.
Yeah.
Right. But that's got to be the overarching driving theme behind everything that we do is achievement.
Well, and I think if you establish, I see traction behind you there on the shelf. If you establish those core values and you live them out in your leadership, they feed into your staff and it'll become very apparent very quickly when we talk about firing fast. It becomes very apparent very fast who doesn't believe those things, right? That starts to bring itself out. And so the more that you can cast that vision to your staff and your team, you're going to grow a lot stronger team a lot faster, because we really do hire and fire by those things. Those are our main tenets. If you're not checking one of those boxes, if you think like achieving things is like super medium, and you get your most medium excited over achievement, you're not going to be a great fit at Hound. It's just not going to work. And so knowing what are those things for you, doing the right thing at all costs.
Yeah.
That's huge at our company. If that is not a core belief of who you are as a human, then it's probably not going to be a fit in our organization. What does that look like in your organization, right? So that would be my encouragement there, because those tenets, those core things really, really drive, I believe, any business forward.
Cool.
Yeah. And they're not just words. So I just recited like seven core values, but we have a primer that goes out to even candidates before they even come in the door. And in that primer, not only does it state our mission, our vision, and then those values, but those values are broken down and says basically what does each one of those things look like inside of our organization as well. So they're defined. So having each one of your values actually defined is incredibly important, because then it allows us to be able to look back and say, all right, does this person, are they truly embodying that value? It's not just my own interpretation of devoted to everyone's success. Here's what we actually think devoted to everyone's success looks like
Cool.
inside the organization.
I love it. So You got some exciting stuff coming up as you transition again from FetchRev to Hound. We've got big stuff coming up in October, December. Why don't you tell the audience about everything you're we're partnering with you on at Local First?
Yeah, I think it's awesome. And do you want to touch on the mixer? I mean, that's kind of the first thing coming up here.
Yeah, the next mixer is going to be Arizona Wilderness, the new location in Phoenix, which is super exciting. So that's, if not seeing me there, seeing Arizona, the new Arizona Wilderness should be enough of excitement to get down
Mike
there.
Anywhere Mike goes, I go.
So. Right, exactly. So it's always going to be a party.
I love that.
So we'll be down there, and that's October 16th.
Yeah.
So we'll be down there that evening. So absolutely. And then also, if you want to speak to the Fall Festival.
Yeah, so what's really exciting about the October 16th event is that's the day after we launch Hound.
Awesome.
So we're really
excited. It'll be a big party.
It's going to be a big party because it's going to be a big party for us, certainly. And, you know, we'll be handing out lots of great things, not only just Hound swag, but also promotions from our own customers.
Cool.
And so those things, you'd be able to get those. And so it'd really be a good coming out party, effectively, for Hound and for the new product. But then really that's the precursor to what we're really excited to participate in is the Fall Festival. Mm-hmm. And so we're sponsoring the Fall Festival. That's November 2nd.
Yep.
It's going to be an all day. We'll have a space there, but more importantly, we're excited to help promote and drive foot traffic mm-hmm. to all the local merchants or as many of the local merchants as we can in and around the Fall Festival as well. So as consumers come in, they'll have the ability to download the Hound app and then get access to things that they'll know and see the different types of merchants that are around at the Fall Festival, but then also get promotions for those merchants after the event as well.
And, so awesome.
Really drive forward there. Should I talk about the next thing?
Up to you. Unless you want to announce it on the 16th. You got to come to Wilderness to find out about the next thing.
I think so, yeah. So we've got some other really exciting stuff.
Be there on the 16th.
Now you have three good reasons to come there.
Yeah.
So that's pretty good.
So 16th, AZ Wilderness, downtown Phoenix. Yeah. Come to the launch of Hound. It's our Local First Arizona community mixer that night, and Hound is the presenting business that's going to be there. I'm so excited. We're going to have music, giveaways. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then just 2 weeks later, we'll be at Hans Park, downtown Phoenix, Hound title sponsor. And I'm so happy we came across each other's paths, not only because your office is like a half mile from my house,
right, yeah.
but makes meetings very simple. I've always been trying to figure out how Local First can play in the field of technology, right? I mean, running an organization with almost 4,000 businesses, you know, we are put on the table to run our nonprofit organization as a business, right? And we've got to move at a fast pace and, you know, be in the game with what are the newest things coming out? How do we connect our businesses to great resources? And so we're excited to have you at the Fall Festival just because, this is the first time you're going to be able to come. It's our 15th anniversary and find the businesses on your phone, walk around and have a great time. So that's November 2nd, 30,000 people. See you guys there. Super excited. Where else can people find you? Whether you're a business owner or a consumer, how could they get access to you?
Yeah, the best place to do that right now is to go to whatishound.com. Eventually, there'll be two sites for both consumer and businesses. But right now, if you want to get any information, it's whatishound.com. And that is Hound with a W, so HOWND.com.
Cool. You know how us software guys are. We can't spell anything the right way. That would be too easy.
Yeah. It helped that the domain was available.
So, yeah, that's true.
That was a good one.
It helps too.
Yeah. It's like, do you guys watch The Office?
Oh, absolutely.
Woof.com.
Yeah.
They get purchased by the Washington University Public Health Fund or something like that. Yeah, just for the acronym.
Exactly.
And that's how you're Hound.
Yeah.
Perfect.
HOWND.
Cool. We'll find you guys online and on all the social medias. You guys are super active. So if you want to reach out to this company, whether you're a business owner or consumer, go find Hound, HOWND. And I just want to plug that we're super excited to announce the second annual Arizona Good Business Summit that's going to be happening January 22nd and 23rd, 2020, downtown Phoenix Convention Center, over 500 business and community leaders. Hope to see you guys there too.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a ton of fun. Thank you both for being on the show today. It was a lot of fun.
Thank you
so much, Thomas.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
So we hope you listening were inspired today by these local leaders that are redefining what it means to do good business. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Conscious Capitalism Arizona, Max 6, and Phoenix Business Radio X. This is Thomas Barr from Local First AZ reminding you that if we want to build a better Arizona, we need to connect deeply with the local businesses that make us proud to call this place home.